Chapter 30. My head rolls back on the headrest and I let my eyes drop shut. I ain't sleeping though. I can't sleep. Not with this feeling in my belly and the thoughts swirling round my head. I should be feeling smug. I should be buzzing. I should be sticking my head out the window and gulping in the air as we fly through the night, enjoying my freedom after too many hours in the bin. But I ain't doing none of that stuff. I don't care about my freedom, because free is the opposite of what JJ is right now. I knew it was bad, not because of what he said, but the way it come out, all quiet down the crackly line, like someone had turned the volume down on him. I'm on remand. They're going to send me down, blood. JJ's going back to the young offenders. I don't want to believe it. His first stretch was bad. I was in pieces when he went down for me that time. But this is worse. This ain't going to be no quick 6 month in and out. This is going to be for long. And right now, it ain't even the young offenders where they're keeping him. The young offenders is all filled up with rioters, so JJ's in big man prison. A shiver runs through me as I think about the stories I've heard about them places. It's the showers that's the worst, I heard. The man them see to it that all the new boys get certified. And the screws just leave them to it. They don't want to be seen getting involved with no naked wrestling. A picture flashes through my mind of JJ getting pushed up against a slippery wall by a bunch of rapists and murderers. They threaten you with bars of soap inside socks, knock you unconscious if they feel like it. Chucking a bottle into a burning police car. That's what he done. Don't sound so bad when you put it like that. Someone else started the fire. Wrong place, wrong time. That's all it was. But they nabbed him for violent disorder. Then they searched him and found a piece he was holding for Wayman. The piece Wayman was making him hold, even though they knew the place was crawling with feds. Then they charged him with possession of firearms. My eyes flicker open, just enough to look down at the phone in my lap. I know this sounds crazy, but I keep waiting for him to ping. I know he can't. I know he'll be slumped in a cell, scared and knackered, but fronting it and pretending like everything's cool. I know they took his phone off him with everything else, including his freedom for the next how many years. I just keep looking at it, like there's a chance he's gonna ping. My phone stays quiet. There ain't even no pings from others. All the BBM madness has died down, like the flames and the noise. I guess everyone's either locked up or playing on their brand new phones and their brand new threads. My mind fills up with scenes of JJ and his prison trackies, lying on some thin mattress, explaining to the man them why he's in there. If anyone can front it, then JJ can. But it ain't gonna be easy, especially not with that tap marking him out as one of the crew. We jerk to a stop at some lights. I squint out into the darkness, not recognising these ends. Where we going? I look sideways at Miss Merfield. She's staring straight ahead, face tinted red in the glow of the lights. I swear she ain't moved a muscle on her face all journey. Even her hair's rigid, scraped back in a knot, strands pulling the skin tight on her cheeks. Somewhere away from all that, she says, like she's talking to the road ahead. The lights change, and I feel myself being sucked back into the seat. Miss Merfield's pissed at me. I know. I can see why. She ain't heard a word from me in over a week, and then out of the blue, she gets a call saying I'm at the police station and I need bail. Even I could see how that would be jarring. She did it, though. She sorted bail. If it wasn't for Miss Merfield, I'd still be behind bars, not knowing about JJ, the worry eating me up. At least now I know. Even though the news is so bad, I feel like I'm being wrung out to dry. At least it's better than not knowing. I'm thankful to Miss Merfield. It's like we're heading out of town. The road is getting wider and straighter, more like motorways, and there ain't hardly no cars in sight. I guess it's too late for traffic. It was midnight by the time we left the police station. Felt like I was there for days in that cell, hearing the clonking of metal and the hollering of boys and girls still hyped from all the craziness. It wasn't just the kids making noise neither. There was mums yelling at the boy them for locking up their babies and dads yelling at their babies for getting themselves locked up. Gobby trash, yardies, posh white types. There was all sorts in there. I thought we was never getting out. The road shrink back to normal size, and Miss Murfield takes her foot off the gas, cruising down these little streets that's lined with neatly trimmed hedges. It's like her road's back in South, only more spaced out. My eyes drop shut and a stab of pain shoots around my body as JJ's voice swims back into my ears. I'm on remand. They're gonna send me down, blood. The phone call was over so quick. We didn't hardly get to speak. Could be years, he said. Years. I can't deal with that. Jamal from the estate went down for shanking some kid on the strip. Jamal was like a big brother to us before he went in. He come out last summer, all hardened and frozen, like he blanked everything out. I'd do anything to stop JJ going the same way. I'd serve his sentence myself if I could. The handbrake croaks, jolting me out of my dark thoughts. We're parked up outside a small row of shops that's giving this faint glow onto the street. They're fancy shops with frilly window displays and posh names like Pandora and Tiny Tots. What's this place? My voice sounds beat. Suddenly I'm tired. I need sleep, but I don't want sleep. I know what I'll end up dreaming about if I try and sleep. You'll see. Miss Murfield kills the engine and unclips her belt, still refusing to look at me. The street's proper quiet. Miss Murfield sets a fast pace, her eyes facing straight ahead. I swear, it's like she's had enough. Like she can't even stand the sight of my face no more. I don't get it. I mean, I get that she's hating on me right now. I just don't get why she's bothered to take me out here. She stops. I nearly trip up on her feet as she turns into this little doorway that's tucked between a shoe shop and a bakery. You wouldn't even know it was there, except if you look closely, you see there's a man standing guard. He's dressed in a suit, like a bouncer, only he ain't your average bouncer. The bouncers I know ain't white and they don't wear a Rolex on the job. As we head for the door, the man's face springs into life, crinkling into a smile for Miss Murfield. Then his eyes slide sideways to me and I clock a change in his expression, his eyeballing my charred jeans and stained hoodie. I can tell he's trying to work out who I am and what I'm doing here with Miss Murfield. I stare up at him, matching his look, but Miss Murfield saying things in his ear, making him laugh, and soon the man's waving us through like he's making an exception for Miss Murfield, just this once. What's this place? I say again as we head down these narrow wood stairs into some kind of basement. I already know Miss Murfield ain't gonna reply. I guess I just want to hear something come out of her mouth. She ain't said a proper sentence to me since she yanked me out the cell. Answers float up to me in the air. Laughter and voices and chinking glasses and under all the buzz and clatter, piano music. My eyes adjust to the dim lighting as I reach the floor, blurry shapes coming out of the darkness. It's like a cave with twinkly fabrics on the walls. There's clusters of people drinking fancy cocktails around the low tables, all the girls in little dresses and all the men in light-coloured trousers and stiff-looking shirts. Practically all the faces is white. I turn to the far corner and track down the piano. That's when I see the first sign that Miss Murfield's melting. It ain't exactly a smile, but for the first time all night, she catches my eye. Then she nods for us to head over. I sit down at the low table, shifting the stool so I'm side on to the man on the piano. He's one of them scruffy posh types, brown hair sprouting this way and that and sideburns that go all the way to his slick white collar. My eyes drop automatically to his fingers. They're zipping up and down the keys like baby mice, so quick I can't keep track. He's good. My head's spinning. I feel like I don't want to be here, but I do. It ain't right, me being here when JJ's locked up in the pen, taking a beating from the man them inside. I should be sorting out visits and thinking about what I can do for my fam. But I'm here, and I can't block out the music, and I can't stop myself from thinking, "Raw, what's this place? Who's this man playing piano? Why has Miss Murfield took me here?" That's Billy. says a voice in my ear. I whip round, realising I've been staring for long. Miss Murfield's still got a serious look on her face, but it don't seem so harsh as it did in the car. She looks like she's going to say more, but this waiter swoops by, setting her off on another round of familiar smiles and kisses. I turn back to the piano. It's like a dream. The type you wake up from thinking about for the next how many hours. I feel my head drop back against the wall, the rough stone catching on my weave through the twinkly threads. The waiter disappears, and I feel Miss Murfield's eyes on the side of my face. I pretend I ain't clocked it for a bit, but then I roll my head. What? I say, even though I know why she's looking at me. All night, I've been waiting for her to ask. Why did you do it, Alicia? She signed the papers for my bell, so she knows what I done. But she don't know the details, don't know why I was there, what made me get greedy with the phones. Any minute that face is gonna ice over again and she's gonna ask why. And then when I can give no good reason, she's gonna shake her head and tell me that's it. No more chances or cups of tea. She's had enough of my badness. She opens her mouth like she's gonna speak. But then the waiter comes back whispering things in her ear and offloading drinks to our table. Miss Murfield jokes with the man, waving her hands this way and that, talking like they go way back. My nerves ease off. She ain't gonna say it. Not yet, anyway. My eyes flit to the tray of drinks. There's two fancy glasses and a silver pot in between them. A smile tries to push its way up my face. It must be 2 a.m. and Miss Murfield's ordered us cups of tea. The music's all fast-moving rhythms and jumpy beats. I think maybe it's jazz, but I ain't never heard proper jazz. The piano's one of them big flat ones with a roof that flips up. There ain't no stand for the music, so I guess this Billy man's making it up. I heard Miss Murfield do that once. I was late for my lesson, so she must have thought I wasn't going to come. She was playing this crazy complex piece when I walked in. I seen she wasn't using no music. I wish I could do that. Billy and I went to music school together, Miss Murfield says in my ear. I got him the job here, 9 years ago. I feel my brow knotting up as Miss Murfield pours the tea into these little glasses. I grew up around here, she explains. Mr. Jacobs used to take me here sometimes. I nearly ask who Mr. Jacobs is, but then I remember it's her old piano teacher. It still seems wrong to think of Miss Murfield having a teacher. It used to be more of a dingy piano bar, she says like she's clocked a look on my face. It's got a bit trendy in the last few years. I just nod. My eyes locked on the piano. Tell the truth, I don't know what look I got on my face. This night's been so crazy, I'm having trouble working out what's in my head. A few hours ago, I was locked up behind bars, and now I'm drinking tea in some over-posh wine bar in West. My thoughts flip to JJ, who's going to be sitting in a cell in prison-issued trackies fronting it to the big men. I take sips of tea, watching the man's fingers scramble up and down the keys as Miss Murfield talks. She's going on about the man, Billy, but I can't hardly hear what she's saying. And even if I could, my mind's on other things. I'm on remand. They're going to send me down, blood. I get this twinge in my belly. I'm panicking now. Picturing him lying in a pool of blood, shanked in the eye with a biro. Big man prison ain't like the young offenders. In the young offenders, they make you drop all your affiliations. They give you things to do, lessons to go to, things that make you forget about all your troubles on the outside. Prison's the opposite. Prison's like a compressed version of the end. Everything happening in a place the size of Peregrine House. And all the beef's 10 times worse. Some people think prison's safe because of the screws patrolling up and down. But the truth is, the screws ain't got no powers. Bare things happen when their back is turned. Sometimes in broad daylight too. Chow time, shower time, exercise time. They come at you and there ain't nothing the screws can do. No one even cares about getting caught because what are they going to do? Half the mandem's in there for life. One more offence ain't going to make no difference. Miss Murfield stops talking. I finish my tea. Put down the glass and try and calm the thoughts in my head. The music goes quiet, and I realise Billy's playing with one hand, taking a sip of water with the other. I follow his movements. aware of Miss Murfield's eyes on my face, feeling my belly cramp up again. She's gonna ask me now. I know it. She's gonna tell me this is it. I keep waiting. Keep looking at Billy to put off the moment when everything comes crashing down. The music gets busy and loud, the noise of the bar rising up to match. My belly feels so tight it's gonna burst, like a plastic bag filled with too much stuff. But she still don't say it. Time ticks on and we still just sit there. Miss Murfield looking at me, me looking at Billy. Then I hear her voice, finally. And it nearly feels like a relief. Alicia. I turn round slowly, knowing my time's up. Did you hear what I said about Billy? Relief swallows me up, even though I know it's still coming. No. Miss Murfield sighs and shifts her stool so her mouth's proper close to my ear. He grew up on an estate in West London, she says, looking at me. He never had a piano. I screw up my face, not believing Miss Murfield's words. That boy is middle-class material through and through. He ain't from no estate. It's true, she says before I can argue. You wouldn't know it to look at him, would you? I shake my head slowly, my eyes running the man up and down as he leans into the keys, the music going all soft and slow. He come from an estate. I don't believe that. Them trousers don't belong on no estate, and them skills on the keys definitely don't belong. How do you practice then? I look at Miss Murfield. If you didn't have no piano. In school, she says in my ear. And I think there was a piano in the local community hall or something. School, I think to myself. That's one thing I ain't got. And that's for community halls. The only place I could go was the shack and they shut it down, I blurt. Missing out the fact that I never touched them keyboards at the shack. I'm thinking of reminding Miss Murfield too that Mr. Pritchard wouldn't hardly let me near the music block after that time I mouthed off at him. But I don't get the chance because Miss Murfield's sticking her face right up to mine. Her eyes wide like she needs me to understand something. Alicia, that's not what I meant. I wasn't thinking about the differences between you and Billy. I do a screw face. Miss Murfield carries on. I brought you here because I wanted to show you what was possible. Look at Billy. Look at him. I do. I turn and watch as the man's arched hands float up to the top of the keyboard like he was born doing it. Then I spin back to Miss Murfield. She's looking at me intensely, her brown eyes staring into mine. You could do that, she says, landing heavily on each word. I swallow, taking in the meaning of what she just said. I'm already thinking of all the reasons why it ain't true. I couldn't, I say, because I ain't got the skills. Miss Murfield jiggles her head like she's annoyed. Billy's been to music school. That's why he's so good. My point is, he got to music school. He passed the auditions. Actually, he got a scholarship. And you know why? I shake my head. Because he believed he could do it. Miss Murfield sits back on her stool, but her eyes stay trained on mine. I stare back. Believe in yourself. She said it to me before. She told me that story about her passing the exam, and I know I was supposed to think, rah, if she can do it, then so can I. I wanted to believe it, but deep down I didn't, because I knew the situation wasn't the same. Miss Murfield was always going to pass exams in the end. She had a good start in life, bare people round her for support. End of the day, we're different types. Things ain't going to work out the same for me and her. My mind flips back to all the times I spent making calls with Miss Murfield, filling out forms, making calls, writing letters. It's true. I never believed I could do it. I didn't even want to do it. Because truly, I never thought I was going to get nothing at the end of it. I was too busy yelling about why it wasn't going to work for me. If Ash can't get a job, neither can I. They hate on us. There ain't no jobs for types like me. But the thing is, Billy was my type. He did it. My eyes glaze over. Thoughts buzzing round my brain. All summer I've been flip-flopping between sides. One day going along with Miss Murfield's plans, and then the next getting another knock and thinking, rah, what's the point? this way, that way, this way, that way, all summer long. It didn't feel right on either side. My life on the roads was gash, but my attempts to go legit wasn't happening. And now I know why. I wasn't feeling it. I never believed I could do it. Billy stops playing, watching as he arches his back and rolls his head in a semicircle, to the left, then to the right. I look at his buff face and try and picture it 15 years younger, smoking a Benny, clutching with the mandem on some concrete estate. Except I guess he wasn't smoking no Bennies. He wasn't clutching on no estate. He was probably practicing scales in a community hall. My thoughts stay stuck on Billy. Maybe he didn't have no troubles at home or problems at school or track record of thieving and shotting and carrying blades on the road, I think to myself. But he's one of us. He's white, but he ain't like Miss Murfield or Big Tits or Mr. Slick. He's more like Twitch, maybe, or Squeak. I always thought clean lifestyles was reserved for them. For the middle class types with links and peas and rich daddies who step in if they run into trouble. All this time I've been saying, bruh, it's alright for them because they can just get a job, find a place, pay their rent. Then if they lose that job or fall behind on rent, there's someone with peas to catch them. I've been saying, rah, it's different for us. We ain't got no rich daddy to scoop us up when we fall. We can't just pop down the bank and ask for a loan. We ain't got no one or nothing to rely on, which is why we end up keeping on thieving and robbing to make the peas stack up. But Billy ain't got no rich daddy, and look at him. As I sit here, taking it all in, something else creeps into my mind. I do have someone to scoop me up when I fall. I've got Miss Murfield. I never saw it like that before. I always thought it was me against the rest of the world. Me and JJ. But now I'm thinking of all them times I busted my way into Miss Murfield's house. Coming away with rolls of notes and bottles of mouthwash and CVs and housing and bacon sandwiches. She saved my life that time Michaela stepped to me. Right now I'm sitting in some posh bar in West, and even though I let her down again, she ain't mouthing off. She's just sitting here telling me I could be like this Billy man. She's been there for me all the time. I can't let go of this thought. I track back in my head, listing all the things Miss Murfield's done for me these last few months. Even when I was still in school, there was times. I spin and face her. What happened with the grant, miss? She looks confused by the question. The grant. You know they cancelled my lessons because the money ran out. I heard you brawling with Mr. Pritchard. You was mouthing off. You won, though, didn't you? You got me a new grant. Slowly, Miss Murfield's head starts to nod, and this little smile creeps up her face. Yes, she says. Something like that. The words sound flat, like lines in a school play. I think about quizzing her more, but suddenly all the energy's gone from my body and I can't hardly hold my head up. I thank Miss Murfield for what she done that time. But the noise at the bar seems to drown out my words, and suddenly my eyelids are dropping shut. She says something about getting back in the car, and I feel myself nodding, dragging myself to my feet. Thoughts stream through my mind as we cruise down the empty roads. Light from the street lamps zapping past my eyes as I start to drift off. You could do that. I can't work out what's real and what's my brain playing tricks. He believed he could do it. The sky's getting light as we pull up outside the hostel. I squint at the boarded up windows, feeling something sink inside me. Feels like suddenly I woke up from a nice dream. I turn to Miss Murfield. I need to say something, but the words seem too big to say. Miss. I trail off, looking sideways at her. Her eyes have mellowed now, and there's wisps of blonde hair falling across her face. She catches my eye, then looks into her lap, and then looks at me again like maybe she wants to say something too. But it don't come out, and I can't think of how to say what I mean, so I just say, thanks, and slide out the car. The front door feels heavy as I push it. I'm so drained it's like I'm doing things underwater. I stand in the darkness waiting for my eyes to adjust when this voice cuts through the silence, jerking me out of my state. Got any? I spin round, instantly alert. Some hollowed out crackhead sways in the shadows. I take a step back, eyeing the spindly woman and feeling this sudden wave of sickness nearly drown me. I hate this junkie and all the others like her. I hate living here with the alley cats, stepping over needles and condoms and shits every day. I hate my trips to Pops and my dealings with buzzed up waste men who ain't got no loyalty to no one. Most of all, I hate knowing that the one person who made this lifestyle okay, the one boy I cared about in these ends, is locked up in the pen. I don't want to be a part of this no more. The woman's looking at me, eyes pleading, greasy hair clinging to her pimpled face. No, I say, even though I know I got 3 pebbles left in my stash. I ain't got nothing for you. I push past the whining cat and head up the stairs. A smell of damp threads wafts out the kitchen as I pass, and I hold my breath already, thinking of the ways I can get peas together to pay proper rent and move out. Because that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get myself out of this lifestyle. I'm going to go legit, like Miss Murphy has been telling me over and over. Only this time, I'm going to do it. Then an idea pops into my head. I duck back into the kitchen and reach down the back of the oven. Grease and dirt clings to my fingers, but I pull out the bag and head straight back down the stairs. The crackhead's hunched up on the broken settee, rocking gently, her bony knees jabbing into her chin. Here, I say, pressing the pebbles into her hand. Then I pull out my old Nokia, clocking the 5 missed calls and thinking, wow, that's bare peas in money terms. If this was yesterday, I'd be chasing them up, selling my last few rocks and heading to Kabul for more. I add the phone to the stash. Take this to Michaela, yeah? She'll give you something for it. The woman looks confused for a second, but then she mumbles something, and I know that even with her mashed up brain, she'll make it happen for the crack. I can't hardly believe what I'm doing. But even just offloading the phone makes me feel dizzy and high. I set off up the stairs, my tired feet dragging like dumbbells, my mind flying. Maybe I'm going to wake up tomorrow and think, oh, what did I do? But I don't think so. Right now, I feel like I've just been set free.